Whether you are starting a business or running a business, maybe you're producing a podcast like The Kara Golden Show. Let's face it, it's always way harder than one might expect. Lots of little details, meticulous planning, producing product, guest coordination, editing, promoting each episode. It's all a ton of work. Managing merchandise, managing cases and book sales too, layer after layer of complexity. And if you're like me, looking for ways to operate more efficiently and effectively is the name of the game. That's why I'm going to let you in on a little secret. ShipStation, the tool that is here to help you, and you need to know all about it. With ShipStation, you can integrate with all the places you sell online, optimize your shipping, save costs and time. Personally, ShipStation has been a lifesaver for me. Its automation features allow me to manage orders from anywhere and print shipping labels with just a click. Seriously, it's that easy. And the cost savings? Unbelievable. With discounts up to 89% off carrier rates, you can't go wrong. Significant savings. And who doesn't want that? An easy-to-use dashboard, robust reporting. Oh, and did I mention that over 130,000 companies have leveraged ShipStation to grow their businesses? Not much churn either. 98% of them stay with ShipStation because it truly works. ShipStation is it. So if you're ready to streamline your shipping process and focus more on what you love, head over to ShipStation.com, the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code KARA to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code KARA. Use code KARA for a free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, promo code KARA.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm super excited to have my next guest here. We have Bennett Maxwell, who is the founder and chairman of Dirty Dough. And come on, everyone has had a Dirty Dough cookie. They have over 70 stores and growing throughout the U.S., but I'm super excited to hear all about his story. While he's the founder, he didn't actually come up with the original, but definitely re-engineered the company a bit. And so we're going to give him for sure that founder title because it's a very, very different company than it was in the beginning. But basically, the cookies are a combination of layers and mix-ins filling within the dough. They are super, super yummy. It's a brand that stands for creativity, indulgence, and a dash of rebellion. I love that description. Lots of different flavors, and he's built a company that is as impactful as it is delicious. The other super interesting thing about his company that I'm dying to get Bennett to talk about is really his give back strategy and what meaning it has for him, because I think along his journey, it's sort of an interesting one where he's a serial entrepreneur and he's seen a few things in his journey of being an entrepreneur that I think is there's lots of learnings there. So without further ado, I'm going to stop talking and welcome Bennett.
Kara, thank you. I'm super excited to be a guest. Appreciate it.
Very excited. So you weren't always a cookie executive. What were you doing before starting Dirty Dough?
I was doing solar cells out of San Diego. So a little bit different, but pretty, you know, no, yeah, very different industry. I had a solar company that we were doing maybe half online, half door to door that I'd started with my brother. So yeah, it was a pretty big pivot.
We talked a little bit in the intro about the early days of Dirty Dough, but can you share that story about how you ended up becoming involved in the company?
Yeah, so I grew up in Utah, and there's a lot of cookie companies out of Utah. The big one that's blown up recently is Crumbl. Everybody in Utah is definitely aware of that. A guy that I went to high school with moved to Arizona to go to school, and he wanted to be the first one serving these large, you know, gourmet cookies served fresh, hot to your door out of Arizona. So he started Dirty Dough at the end of 2018, just out of his apartment, just delivery only. And he posted on Facebook saying, "Hey, I sell out of cookies almost every night. I would like, you know, money to go build a storefront." So I invested in 2019. First storefront opened up in March 2020, out of all the months. At the end of that year, I was in San Diego doing my solar company. I saw, actually, it was a Crumbl that was just crushing it in the San Diego area. I was like, dude, this is a great market. Let's franchise it. I'm going to be your first franchisee. Kind of long story short, he's like, I don't want to be involved in this anymore. Like, it's just a lot of work being a baker, right? Because that's what the whole model was. Order all your raw ingredients, a bunch of teenagers and college kids, mix everything in small mixers, you know, weigh it by hand, portion it by hand. So I ended up purchasing it from him at the beginning of 2021. And then, yeah, that first year, redoing everything other than the name, the model, the concept, you know, the meaning, the purpose, the colors, the branding, the logo, and all of the recipes. And the goal was to make it as simple as possible. So rather than requiring every single store to make all their cookies from scratch, we sourced that all for them. And then now we ship out pre-portioned cookie dough balls, you know, stuffed cookies, multi-layered cookies to the franchisees. And all they have to do is put it in the oven and press start. So really going for simplicity. It was definitely a little bit more work on our end as the corporate side, but it makes the franchises a lot easier to open, a lot lower cost, you know, labor and all of that. So yeah, it's been a wild ride so far, still figuring it out as I go.
In today's world, which I will admit can at times seem filled with too much of the wrong information, it's essential to find a good source that truly gets to the heart of what I want to know. I am super excited about our next sponsor, as I've been a big fan of their content for some time now. That sponsor is the Washington Post. Their depth on topics from business to tech isn't just impressive, it's essential reading for me. Whether I'm catching up on the latest tech trends or understanding how the day's news truly impacts my family, the Washington Post is my trusted source. Let's talk specifics. Their business and tech coverage, absolutely top-notch. Just imagine having the most insightful articles at your fingertips, including the unparalleled AI reporting from Drew Harwell or the pulse on tech and online culture from Taylor Lorenz. And the best part? You can listen to articles just like you listen to this podcast, making it perfect for your busy lifestyle. I was just reading an article from one of my favorite Washington Post writers, Frances Stead Sellers. She covers entrepreneurs like myself, but also covers other interesting topics, including health, as well as some very interesting books. I also love getting their For You newsletter, which is their roundup of stories tailored just for my interests, right in my inbox every evening. The Washington Post app is super well done, I think. It makes it incredibly easy to stay up to date and follow my favorite journalists on the go. And if you ever thought that the Washington Post is just about politics, think again. They cover everything under the sun, from climate and culture to crosswords and cooking, providing a world of surprising stories and vital insights. Okay, enough of the love fest that I have for the Washington Post. Here's the deal. Being a listener of the Kara Golden Show has its benefits, and this one is too good to miss. Now is the time to sign up for the Washington Post. Go to washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden. To subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. That's 80% off their typical offer. So this is truly a steal. Once again, that's washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. Whether you are starting a business or running a business, maybe you are producing a podcast like the Kara Golden Show, let's face it, it's always way harder than one might expect. Lots of little details, meticulous planning, producing product, guest coordination, editing, promoting each episode. It's all a ton of work. Managing merchandise, managing cases and book sales too, layer after layer of complexity. And if you're like me, looking for ways to operate more efficiently and effectively is the name of the game. That's why I'm going to let you in on a little secret. ShipStation, the tool that is here to help you, and you need to know all about it. With ShipStation, you can integrate with all the places you sell online, optimize your shipping, save costs and time. Personally, ShipStation has been a lifesaver for me. Its automation features allow me to manage orders from anywhere and print shipping labels with just a click. Seriously, it's that easy. And the cost savings? Unbelievable. With discounts up to 89% off carrier rates, you can't go wrong. Significant savings. And who doesn't want that? An easy-to-use dashboard, robust reporting. Oh, and did I mention that over 130,000 companies have leveraged ShipStation to grow their businesses? Not much churn either. 98% of them stay with ShipStation because it truly works. ShipStation is it. So if you're ready to streamline your shipping process and focus more on what you love, head over to ShipStation.com, the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code Kara to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code Kara. Use code Kara for a free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, promo code Kara. So you jumped in and suggested this franchise model. And so you were the first franchisee.
That's what I was suggesting. But rather than him franchising it and me buying a franchise, I ended up buying the company, everything. I bought him out. And then it took me about a year to work on the franchise documents, come up with a model and all of that. And then now I'm the franchisor. We've been selling franchises for just over 2 years. We have 60 some odd stores open. We have another, we do mobile franchises like food trucks. So we have another 13 of those. So yeah, all in all, we're about 75 franchises that we've opened. We have another 40 something under construction, and we've sold just over 450. So it'll take us a little bit to open them. You know, if somebody buys five franchises, we'll give them 5 years to open them, one per year. But it's been a lot of work. Last February of 2023, we had 7 stores open. So we went from 7 to 70 in 13 months, which has been a little crazy.
Wow. That's wild. So we've had a lot of people on here who have done franchising, but most of them have created the brand. And that's what I really kind of hear in your story that how many brands are out there, right? That maybe you think are really great that, you know, maybe the founder's thinking about shutting it down. Maybe they can't get it financed or whatever. And could it actually be a great franchise? And that's the thing that I think you naturally, it sounds like, jumped into and just decided, let me go and be the franchisor and start to bring this in. How difficult is it to start a franchise company like you have?
Yeah, I don't think it's super difficult. It's really getting an attorney and paying them $20,000 to $30,000 for your franchise disclosure documents. What's a lot harder is selling the franchises, supporting them, opening them up, coming up with all the processes, especially when you're, you know, opening up a store a week. That's a little bit harder than actually just, you know, setting it up and becoming a legal franchise. Anybody can go, you know. Again, you go find an attorney, pay him $20,000 to $30,000 in 1 to 3 months, you're franchised, but that doesn't mean anything until you actually sell franchises and start opening up stores and supporting them.
Right. And are there, do you only allow like one in every city, or how do you sell franchises? Is it, is it by city? Is it?
Yeah, typically we'll do zip code. So, you know, some cities can handle more than one store, where other cities can't even handle one store. So we give them an area, but it's more based off of population as well as drive time. for you know DoorDash, Uber Eats, all of that, it's a good 20-30% of the business. So are they can you know will they drive 5 miles? Will they drive 15 miles? And what's the population there? So there's a little bit of dependency based on the density of population, but it's typically we'll get a zip code or a handful of zip codes targeting a certain drive radius as well as population.
Do you try and be around colleges? I hate to say that all college students eat a lot of cookies, but I actually think that's probably true. Even maybe right when they get to campus, if they see a cookie store, have you seen that there's certain locations that are better for you in cities than others?
Yeah. I mean, the Tempe location, which was our first store, Tempe, Arizona, ASU is one of the, you know, the largest schools. And it was primarily college kids. And that was kind of the model, like, oh, let's go to college towns. There's another cookie company that does that, and they do it really well, called Insomnia Cookies. And they'll open up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning on the weekends. As we opened up more stores, as well as looking at the demographics of competitors, we actually found out that, yes, college kids are buying them, but it's typically families. So like a mom 25 to 50 years old with a few kids, that's more of the target demographic, as you know, we've expanded from one store to 70. But yeah, definitely college kids are still buying a lot of cookies.
Lots of cookies. So brick and mortar is difficult to scale in an expedited manner, especially trying in certain cities, trying to get labor to come and build. What has been kind of the biggest, hurdle to building brick and mortar, but also how have you been able to open so many stores in such a short period of time? And through these franchises, but I would think like that would be sort of a gatekeeper for a lot of your franchisees.
Yeah, the whole model that we're creating and have created is all based on simplicity. So if I can ship you a cookie dough ball that's already pre-portioned, every cookie is formulated to cook for the same time, temperature, and fan speed, and ovens are programmed, it is as simple as you know putting it on a cookie sheet, putting it in the oven, press start. So that simplifies it quite a bit. You don't need to store raw ingredients. You don't need to have your own mixers. You don't need to order all your raw ingredients or deal with the waste. So starting with just simplifying the model has definitely allowed us to grow quicker. The bottleneck in opening up storefronts is finding the actual locations, especially when you know we can operate out of 600, 700 square feet, but there's not that many retail pads in good mm-hmm. areas that are 600 or 700 square feet. So a lot of, you know, franchisees will sign on a lease that's 1,000 or 1,100 square feet, which is still small, but it is a little bit, you know, more than necessary. So finding the lease locations is definitely the bottleneck. But once you find one, the build out is very simple. Again, if you're building out 600 square feet with 200 of that being lobby space, you know, there's not much to it, a few floor drains and things like that, but really building out really good processes. And from the beginning, because we sold so many franchises right off the bat, we always had the mindset of we're not going to implement something unless it works for hundreds of stores or 1,000 stores. So right from the get-go, we built out a custom admin portal, and you have this, what we call as our build out checklist. And I think we're at like 107 steps, just as detailed and dummy proof on this is how you find your realtor and how you vet them and the documents for permits, and you can download them here and then upload them here and get everything approved. So really simplifying that. And I think that came from really hiring a CEO right when we franchised, who's been doing this for 40 years. She did a company called Maui Waui Smoothies and Coffee. So I was very lucky that I got to piggyback on everything that she's learned. And she opened up 650 plus franchises before selling. So wow. Really getting her, we got some good advisory board members as well. And just knowing that I don't know anything because I was a sales background, right? This is all very new to me. So just bringing in the people who have been there, done that, and leaning on that expertise.
I love it. So out of the gates as a startup, you faced lots of adversity with the Cookie Wars series of lawsuits. Can you talk a little bit about that period of horribleness and what it ultimately shaped your business out to be?
Yes, it was May of 2022, right before we opened up our first franchise location. So we had one corporate store and that was it. And we get, you know, I get an email like, hey, here's a lawsuit from Crumble. And I was just like, heart sinks, you know, like, crap. How am I supposed to, like, these guys are already doing they just put up billboards saying they do 1 million cookies a day. You could reverse engineer the math and like, this is a $1 billion company and they're suing us and we have one store open, you know? But once I actually read through the lawsuit, I'm like, oh, this is silly. Like there's literally pictures of cookies with sprinkles side by side and cookies with caramel on it. And I'm just like, and vanilla ice cream. I'm like, come on guys, this is very silly, but whatever. It's, you know, it's a tactic that a lot of businesses use to slow down competitors when you have more money and you can, you know, get tied up in a lawsuit. About 6 weeks went by and a local news station picked it up, you know, Crumble suing these competitors. And when that happened, I was like, okay, well, if it's out, I'm going to at least get my side of the story. And I might be biased, but I think I'm right. I think this is total BS. And kind of the first thing was really actually our billboards. We put up some billboards that said coming soon in May. Then they sued us. And then in June, they put up a bajillion billboards, like a lot, like every other billboard, I swear, is a Crumble billboard. And then in July, when it was made public, we threw up some kind of fun, playful billboards. One of them said, you know, let your taste buds be the judge. And another one is cookies so good, we're being sued. Lots of different kind of fun sayings. And I'm sure a lot of people drove by that and saw it, but I posted on social media and I tagged Crumble. I said, I love your billboards. Do you love mine? Or what do you think about mine? Or something like that. And that got, you know, well over 1 million views. And then a lot of local news started picking it up. And then some national news picked it up. And it just gave us literally millions and millions of eyes on our brand, which we were very small. But I think it was apparent that we had the more simplified model, which flooded us with franchise inquiries. And then we sold a ton of franchises. And then now we're fulfilling on all of everything that we've sold, trying to keep up with that and opening up as quickly as we can.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than some other lawsuits that I've heard about, but it's surprisingly easy to actually file a lawsuit. So it's amazing. And as somebody said to me a few years ago, as you start getting bigger, I mean, it just kind of becomes normal, right? For brands and over something, you know, and it's definitely something that every founder, but the first one you get, and especially when it's somebody that has a lot more money than you, it's a very scary feeling for sure. So mental health is at the heart of Dirty Dough. And why has this been baked into the business's DNA since you've been involved and championing the company?
Yeah, there's about a 6 month overlap from when I bought Dirty Dough till I exited the solar company. In that 6 months, I was trying to do both. And I have a wife, I have 3 young kids, which, you know, I tell myself they're the highest priority, but that's not what my life actions were showing. I was just always working nights, weekends, whatever. I disregarded those relationships, family relationships, my health. I got up to 310 pounds and I was just work, because one day I'm going to have enough to then go do what I want to do, you know, spend more time with my family. Well, when I sold the solar company, I achieved some of those financial goals. So this was just under 3 years ago and it felt great. You know, I was 28 and I'm like, man, you know, I got some money in the bank. I have some rental properties, all of that. And I felt amazing. But that didn't last, right? You quickly go back to your base levels of happiness. That's just how our brains are wired. And I immediately, within a few days, maybe a week, I set the next goal. And then I started sacrificing health, relationships, and all that again. And I'm like, okay, I need to stop this or else it's going to go on forever. I'm going to hit a goal and then just do the next goal. So I told myself that I was working hard to get more money because more money means more time off, which means more vacation time, which means more time with my family. And more time with my family means I'm happier. And then I thought, why can't I just be with my family every day? Like I don't need to do all of that. So I kind of went through my midlife crisis at age 28. And like, what's my purpose? And I started seeing a therapist. I read some books. I texted a bunch of friends and family. What do you see as my core values? I put it in spreadsheets, organized it all, wrote my own obituary. And I narrowed it down to what I feel I want. And what I'm after is all about joy and fulfillment. And then I threw in despite life's dirtiness. So don't wait for life to be perfect in order to be, you know, have more joy and fulfillment. Focus on yourself first and focus on, you know, helping as many people as possible. So with that, how do you build that in or bake that into the brand? Well, we were already doing these large, you know, gourmet cookies. And as opposed to the competitors that spend a lot of time decorating the top of the cookies with a lot of frosting, we were focusing on the inside of the cookie. And I kind of drew that correlation, like, oh, that's a really good correlation. Like, we're going to focus on the inside because the inside is what matters. And that developed a tagline, which is in all our stores, you know, the inside matters most. So these cookies represent life in that they're dirty, messy, and perfect on the outside, but they're sure as hell delicious. And I started running with that because that's something that, you know, I'm super passionate about. If we're to have more joy and fulfillment, how do you get that? It comes down to your mindset or your mental health. So that's where the messaging is baked in there. You know, we care about your feelings. Life gets messy and that's okay. Perfectly imperfect. All of these different messages that are on our packaging and in our stores. And then we went and created a nonprofit called Life is Sweet to build a mental health wellness center in a K-12 store, you know, nearby, sorry, a K-12 school nearby one of our stores. So you can give back to the community while educating kids on mental health, identifying emotions and different science-based methods on how to regulate those, you know, breathing exercises, meditation, things like that. So it was, you know, going back, it would be great. And I'm 1000% sold on, like, you have to have a bigger purpose and you have to have a give back built in because that's what drives us. It's not finances. So really having that inside and helping me drive all of my decisions and developing that mission statement has been super crucial for me.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. So you're a serial entrepreneur. When did you know that this company was successful? So you get hit with, you know, a lawsuit, you see all these competitors out there that are building. I always think that you, as a founder, you know, you worry about those competitors to some extent, but you always think that they have it way easier than you do, right? And how did you, I guess it's part one is kind of courage, right, to keep going. But when do you know you're successful? Like, what are the metrics where you really feel like, okay, we're going to make it?
Yeah.
It's great.
Man, I have no idea because I still feel like it's a move. I tell myself this, and I've been telling myself this maybe six times over the last 3 years. In 6 months, it's all going to change. Mm-hmm. When we become a franchise, it's all going to change. When we open our first store, when we open our first dozen stores, and you solve so many problems each time you hit those milestones, but it just creates other challenges that you have to solve as well. So I think it's definitely a moving target. I feel like, you know, the first, like, oh, okay, I think we're going to make it. I think this is going to become successful is when we started selling a ton of franchises. Like, okay, if I got 100 people that are believing in me and the model and the brand and the messaging and the purpose enough to give me, you know, an upfront $30,000 or $50,000 franchise fee and invest another, you know, $250,000 in opening up a storefront. I felt like that was a good validation. Like, hey, we're going somewhere. And we've also raised capital. We've raised about $5 million. So every time you get a check from an investor, you know, that's also like, okay, you know, more traction, the brand's being built, you know, more people know you. And then I guess the third thing is, going to franchise conferences, most people know about our brand, which were, you know, our first store opened up 20 months ago. So, and a lot of people have heard of us, know what we're doing. So I guess those three things, a little bit of a mixture, but I'm still, you know, still figuring it out.
Yeah, definitely. So when you look at the, on building community, I mean, community is such an important, like people are getting to know your brand. Obviously you have the physical stores that are being built by these franchisees, but also the online effect, social media, of course. Where do you think you've been able to kind of get the most marketing or building of your brand? I mean, where do you feel like that's been the word out? I mean, you touched on a little bit about consumers talking about it, and obviously franchisees are sharing that they're opening and things like that. But how do you do that when you're a brand new brand that is looking to kind of build a brand?
Yeah. I mean, social media for sure. You do a TikTok video that's 4 seconds with some weird saying in the background that's popular, and you just open up a cookie. But these are three-layer cookies, you know, a peanut butter cookie on the outside with the chocolate dough in the middle with hot fudge, and you get a million views. You're like, that's pretty cool. Let's keep doing those. So I think leveraging social media from the business standpoint was really big. The lawsuit was definitely big because it gave us that national exposure. And it wasn't the lawsuit that gave us the national exposure. It was our reaction to it and really, I guess, boldness. Like, we threw up billboards. We also paid professional actors to make commercials making fun of the lawsuit, which also got millions of views. And people are like, well, who's this cookie brand that's like trying to stand up to, you know, big company? But we were doing it in a lighthearted, you know, fun way. And then I would say the third thing is my personal social media. 2 years ago, I didn't have a LinkedIn account. I wasn't really posting on anything. And I just got the advice, like, you need to build a personal brand because you're not going to be with Dirty Dough forever. You need to build a personal brand. And once I started posting daily, you know, podcast clips or whatever, I feel like that built quite a bit of momentum. And most of the franchises that we've sold have actually come from my personal social media. And it's not like I'm just talking about franchises. I talk about mental health a lot and fitness and family life and all of that. But I guess being more vulnerable and getting myself out there and the things that I like, people relate to that. And then if they like it, you know, they're applying for franchises. But a mixture of those three things, I think it really hyped up the brand and got us to be a national brand pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, I always kind of hesitate or cringe about the word personal brand, because I think some people hear that and think, like, you know, there's a lot of ego involved in it. But I really do believe that, I mean, as many people have said, Hint would not be the brand that it is today, which is, you know, a couple hundred million in net sales, if they weren't kind of borrowing equity from my founding story of why I did it. And so that has been, you know, a major piece of growing the brand. So I think you are 100% right that it's a responsibility of, you know, founders, CEOs to be on, and also when there's problems. I mean, I'm able to see, people know that I'm visible on social media. And so, you know, if they can't get an answer, they'll come and talk to me about it. And I've been able to spot issues along the way as well. Just, you know, if there's more than a couple that come in over a couple of days, kind of about the same thing, like your website is doing this or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff is really, really critical. So, and we're all human so far, right? And so we're, you know, capable of missing some things along the way. So definitely agree with you on that for sure. So what's your favorite SKU in the Dirty Dough lineup?
Anything with the cream cheese. So what's the last one I had? The cinnamon roll one, and it was stuffed with some cream cheese stuff. Other than that, just the classic chocolate chip. I get that a lot with my kids. There's a Dirty Dough just like right in front of my house. So it's, for whatever reason, hearing my 3-year-old son say Dirty Dough is just, it just gets me. I'm like, you say Dirty Dough, we're going to get you cookies because it's so freaking cute. But anyways, yeah, I think those two are really good. If you add ice cream, I think that's our best product, though. Or we call it the Dirty Scoop. So you get a warm cookie, throw some ice cream, throw some toppings on it, which was really just a way that I made up to get rid of or to reduce waste. So rather than throwing away the cookies at the end of the night, we keep them and then we sell them into a cookie shake or that Dirty Scoop product, which I think is our two best products. And they're our two highest margin items as well. So I like them as a consumer, but also as a business owner, I love them.
That's great. So any stories along the way that have really helped you to know that you're on the right track? And maybe there's, I always say that consumer stories are really the ones that help founders, help leaders and companies kind of keep going, right? That, you know, you're hearing these stories where, you know, happiness was created, where, you know, maybe somebody was able to send their kids the cookies that they couldn't be there for. I don't know. But I'd love to hear if you've heard any stories like that.
Yeah. And really, we have two customers. We have the customer that's buying our cookies. And then we have the customer that I view as more my direct customer, which is the franchisee. And I do franchisee interviews like weekly, just one-on-one, seeing what's going good and what's not, which is very good on both standpoints. Like, where are we lacking support? Because we are lacking support, right? We're always lacking support. So what's the feedback? How can we improve? And then what are you doing well and what's working well? And then sharing that with other franchisees. But it's great to see people, especially the ones that are really involved in their communities. And like somebody just sent me a picture. I think it was the Sarasota, Florida. And it's a Little League baseball uniform with the Dirty Dough, you know, logo on the back. And I'm like, that's so cool. That's
awesome.
They're sponsoring that. So I love seeing that from the franchisees and the customers just reading the reviews. And I get the emails every day. Any reviews, like total amount of reviews, and then anything with 3 stars or less, I like to read over to see what it is. But balancing out, like, okay, we got 500 reviews in the last few days, and you know the average is a 4.8 or 4.9, and then scrolling through those is very satisfying just to see how much people love the product as well as the brand and the messaging that go along with it.
So what are the goals coming up for you as you are obviously opening some new franchises? Do you want to talk about anything around that you're really looking to do?
Yes. There's a thousand things we're looking to do, right?
Yeah.
Most recently, we brought on a new CEO who's the former CEO of Jimmy John's, and he owns a management group. It's been about 3 months, and they're making a lot of much needed changes and improvements. And a lot of that is to the product offerings. We're adding ice cream sandwiches and edible cookie dough and, well, what I refer to like dirty sodas, which are sodas with different types of mix-ins, which is based out of Utah. Oddly enough, yesterday I was watching Hulu and Sonic has a commercial and now they're doing dirty sodas and calling them dirty sodas. So that's starting to, you know, kind of become a thing, but really adding those different product lines. So, you know, whatever we can do to increase sales for franchisees while providing more delicious products to the customer is definitely a pro. And then we have 40 something stores under construction right now. So that we're always, you know, signing more leases and opening up those. And every store that we open up, you know, your economies of scale get better and better. You get to purchase more flour, and all your cost goes down. So the goal is to be at 1,000 units. I guess, what are we at? 3.5 years left to go, 4 years left to go from the time we opened up our first one. So we've, you know, sold 450 of them. We're coming up on it, but yeah, that's the goal. 1,000 units with 1,000 wellness centers built out, in these local schools. And that's where I think it's really cool. Like, okay, if we really had 1,000 wellness centers in K-12 schools and each one of them had 10 people going through it a day, like, we're educating 10,000 kids a day on mental health and identifying emotions. Like, that's what gives me the chills. And like, man, that's a cool goal to go after. Especially knowing that my daughter, she's 7 years old in elementary, and her elementary has one of these wellness rooms that she could pop in, identify her emotions, identify, you know, from a scale from 1 to 10, what she's feeling, and then choose different activities and then identify the emotion going out after 10 minutes so she can see what helps her feel better and what doesn't, which I think is just really cool to start focusing on emotions at that young of an age.
Yeah, definitely. So for your mobile franchises, how does that work? So you're franchising, like if somebody orders from you, from your website, do you guys own that? Is that a separate company? Kind of, I guess, is that how you view it?
So the nationwide shipping is done by corporate, which we don't push at all. We want people to buy for the local franchisees, and people aren't going to, you know, go pay $20 for shipping to have cookies arrive in 2 days when they have a store down the street. Right. So we just don't want to compete with our franchisees at all, you know, on that level. On the mobile franchise side, it's event based. So let's say you owned a franchise and there's an event center down the street, a football game, a baseball game, whatever. A mobile franchisee could bring a food truck or food trailer and sell their cookies there for that day.
Got it.
Or for 2 days or the weekend. But so it's really good brand awareness for whoever has the brick and mortar store, because where does all the repeat business go?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that trailer is gone in 2 days, right? So it has to go to that brick and mortar. So they really feed, you know, hand in hand as far as, you know, promoting the brand, getting more people to try the product. And typically those events, you know, you're selling your cookies for like $6. So that the margins on them are pretty good as well.
That's interesting. Are those growing pretty fast, those mobile? They seem like they'd be pretty easy to set up.
Yeah, it's a lot lower of a barrier to entry. So kind of going back to the mission statement of joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness, the two pillars that I'm really focusing in to achieve that is one, the mental health. And there's two parts of that, the messaging and then the nonprofit. And then the second one is empowering people through entrepreneurship, because that's just something that's brought me a lot of joy and fulfillment. So what does it take to be an entrepreneur? You know, you need time, money, expertise. How do we simplify that so more people could kind of take that leap of faith into entrepreneurship? And centralizing the production allows a storefront to be built for, you know, half to a third of the cost when compared to the competition. You also asked about labor and hiring a little bit earlier. You could run a store with one employee if you need to. So it just simplifies everything. And then the trailer goes even further. And then it's like half the cost of a brick and mortar again, you know. So you could buy one trailer to maybe buy six cookie trailers or mobile franchises compared to like one franchise of a competitor. So it's really just, again, trying to lower that barrier of entry to entrepreneurship.
That's awesome. So Bennett Maxwell, founder and chairman of Dirty Dough, will have all the info in the show notes as well. But thank you so much for coming on and good luck with everything. I'm super excited for you. And if you have not tried Dirty Dough, you need to find one local to you or go online and check it out for sure. But thank you so much. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, Kara.
Thanks again for listening to The Kara Golden Show. If you would, please give us a review and feel free to share this podcast with others who would benefit. And of course, feel free to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of our podcast. Just a reminder that I can be found on all platforms at Kara Golden. I would love to hear from you too, so feel free to DM me. And if you want to hear more about my journey, I hope you will have a listen or pick up a copy of my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Undaunted, where I share more about my journey, including founding and building Hint. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.